that, of course, jubilation as thousands take to the streets in Zimbabwe celebrating the end of Mugabe's rule. Welcome to the Karima Brown Show. This is 7:02. You are listening to, and of course, it's just gone 7 minutes after 8 o'clock. We're going to be bringing you all the latest from Zimbabwe. We're speaking to journalists who are based in Harare. We're speaking to analysts. We're speaking to members of the opposition. We're going to bring it to you as it happens. Of course, a historic occasion. Africa's oldest leader and, of course, one of the world's longest serving presidents, Robert Mugabe, resigns today, and we're going to bring it to you live. We're going to breathe a little. We're going to soak in the atmosphere. We're going to listen to the people. We're encouraging Zimbabweans in South Africa to call us, to tell us what this occasion means for them. The number to call, 011-883-0702. The SMS line, 317-0702. And the WhatsApp line, 072-702-1702. And of course, life also continues to go on here, in spite of and perhaps because of also the momentous occasions in Zimbabwe. We will be focusing on South African news and information, one of which, of course, is the anti-corruption indaba, which took place in Gauteng today. And we will be speaking with Gauteng's transport MEC, Mr. Ishmael Vadi. Then after 9 o'clock, we look, of course, to the African National Congress, less than 30 days before the ANC goes to an elective conference. I will be speaking with political analyst Lukhona Mguni about ANC branch nominations ahead of that conference, which takes place at NASREC. You can, of course, hear the show on 702 in the Jersey area on the regular dial, and you can join in via live stream via the internet and by listening to 702 on the DSTV audio bouquet, or connect with us via our WhatsApp line, which is 072-702-1702. And you can also engage with us on Twitter at Radio 702. Remember to include our hashtag when you do send us your tweets and when sharing your comments.
702 SMS Karima on 31702.
9 minutes after 8 o'clock, President Robert Mugabe resigned as Zimbabwe's president a few hours ago, shortly after Parliament began an impeachment process to end his nearly four decades of rule. The 93-year-old clung on for a week after an army takeover and expulsion from his own ZANU-PF party, which also told him to exit the stage. Thousands have taken to the streets in Zimbabwe as well as in South Africa in celebrating the end of Mugabe's rule. And as I said to you earlier, we are going to be bringing you a range of interviews. We're going to be starting off with Zimbabweans, Professor Brian Raftopoulos, a veteran political analyst and also director of research, Solidarity Peace Trust. Professor Raftopoulos, did you think that this was going to happen? And did you think this was going to happen today?
Evening, Karima. Thanks for having me on the program. And I thought it would drag out a little bit more. I mean, I knew that he was going, but I never thought I'd see the end of Robert Mugabe in my lifetime. I certainly thought that he would stay in power till he passed on. But this is clearly a defining moment for Zimbabwe, but it's a defining moment marked by danger warnings as well.
Absolutely. We're going to come to those danger warnings. But as I said in my introduction, we are also just going to allow people to let off the steam after 37 years of draconian rule, of hardship, of active struggle. People must never forget that Zimbabweans put up a valiant struggle against oppression, even against the oppression coming from a former liberator via Mr. Mugabe's government and repressive regime. And of course, I want to reflect on that, Brian, a little bit.
Yeah,
sure. You've been watching, I suppose, and speaking to relatives back home. You know, what is it that goes through your mind as a Zimbabwean today, at this very moment? I mean, the scenes of jubilation, people, even analysts on international television stations breaking down. Like you say, people didn't think in their lifetime.
Yeah, I think this is a... For me, it's been a really strange experience, because I think, you know, like you say, Zimbabweans have been struggling for a long time. It's been one of the most active civic movements on the continent.
Yes.
They did pretty much everything. They had general strikes, they had demonstrations, they appealed to regional and international bodies. They fought, they created opposition parties, they fought elections, they won elections, but were denied victory. So this has been a long struggle. And for many of us who, you know, formerly we were also part of ZANU-PF in the 70s, became civil servants, then became critical and became part of the opposition, this has been a really big change and quite an experience to go through all those levels of change and to see what it does for people. But I'm really glad for the people of Zimbabwe today that they can release all that anger and frustration and have a sense of hope once again. Because one of the things Mugabe's regime did was to take away that sense of hope.
Yes. And if one looks at just, you know, the emotions, it's obviously, like you say, bitter struggles have been won, lost, an election was stolen. People have paid huge personal prices, particularly people such as yourselves, many, many Zimbabweans that come from the liberation movement, that saw it turning in on itself, that saw it lose its revolutionary aspects, its progressiveness. I mean, if you look back and you think now, you know, when did it start? When was the turning point in your mind where Robert Mugabe turned away from being a liberator to becoming someone who wanted to be a lifelong ruler and who wanted to preside almost like an overlord over the people?
Well, you know, if you talk to people, if you study the history of Zimbabwe, some of this started even during the days of the liberation movement.
Yes.
Where people that were opposed to him were treated very badly, people like Wilfred Munda and others. And but in the post-colonial period, I think the defining moment was the mid-80s in Matabeleland, the Gukurahunde massacres.
Mm-hmm.
This was the first sign of how far his regime, including those who now have removed him, who were central to it, would go to keep him in power. And the kind of mass murders that we saw, the marginalization of whole sections of the country. And then in the 2000s, when he faced the possibility of electoral defeat, in the early 2000s and then in 2008 in particular. And this for liberation movements is always a defining moment.
Mm-hmm.
When the sense that they have a proprietary role over the future of the country is challenged. And then they can't accept that. That's a defining moment. And that certainly was the case in Zimbabwe. And for us, as I said, all of us who were involved in nationalist politics from the 70s, to see that happening, that was a big traumatic experience when the government that you trust, that you loved, turns on you and others as citizens. It's a very defining moment.
Absolutely. It's just gone 8:15, and I'm, of course, in conversation with a series of individuals, from activists to academics, all of them with ties to Zimbabwe, getting their personal takes on the astounding developments as President Robert Mugabe steps down after 37 years in office. Now, of course, everybody's television screens are filled with images coming from the streets of Zimbabwe. People overjoyed, jumping on trucks, speaking to the military, speaking, of course, to journalists. The emotions palpable. And, of course, people have been speaking out about how they feel about this historic occasion. Let's take a listen to a social activist, Vemba, breaking down on international television about the momentous events playing itself out on the streets of Zimbabwe.
We were tired of this man. We are so glad he's gone. We don't want him anymore. And yes, today it's victory. It's victory in our hearts. It's victory for our children. And it's totally normal. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We understand. I think you're allowed to cry on a day like this. I think pretty much everybody in Zimbabwe is crying at this moment. Did you ever think you would live to see this day, though? I mean, it's been so long coming.
I never thought I would. I'm an activist, and I've been fighting, and I've been speaking for the people. And I've been saying to the people, if it's not for my generation, it's for my children's generation. I've got two children, one in school. And every day you wake up, you don't know where to get food. You don't know whether you've got enough school fees. It has been the worst experience. People are scattered all over the world. The word family doesn't mean anything to us anymore because families are all over the world, in England, America. People want to come back home and they only see each other on the internet. So for us, this is what we've always wanted. We don't want him anymore. We really don't. Not anymore.
And he's gone, but are you sure that there is now real democracy coming to Zimbabwe and real freedom, that they can't put the genie back in the bottle?
Look, what I can say to the Zimbabweans is this. Zimbabwe, if we manage to do this today, a historical moment like this, we can certainly, certainly bring democracy from tomorrow onward. Because we don't know who the leader is right now. We don't have a president, unless they've announced it, but the letter didn't say who our leader is. But I want to urge Zimbabweans, if we've come together today and we have said we don't want this man and he's got to resign, we have to come together again and stand for a democratic country going forward for our generation, for our children's generation.
Of course, Vimba, they're speaking on international television. I'm joined now by former Zimbabwean finance minister and leader of the People's Democratic Party, Tendai Biti. Mr. Biti, in many ways, the sentiments there by the social activists sums up the sentiments of Zimbabweans, not just in your country, but wherever they find themselves in the world at this point.
Yeah, look, it's a surreal feeling. We are not sure whether we are awake. We are not sure whether tomorrow we wake up with the nightmare that Mugabe is still around. We have spent the whole of our lives fighting Mr. Mugabe. We have spent the whole of our lives living under a terrible predatory dictatorship. So to think that it actually happened and happened in this manner without loss of life, without destruction of property, is just a miracle. And the only way I can describe it is that it's a revolution, a soft revolution, but a revolution all the same. But I think for tonight, I think the gods must allow us to imbibe, to be happy, to forget about everything. But tomorrow we know that we'll be faced with the stark reality of the obligation to reconstruct our country again, to manage carefully the transition, and to make sure that today is not a dream. But tonight we celebrate, and tonight we will not import tomorrow's problems and tomorrow's challenges, which we know are there and they are huge.
Absolutely. Japhet Ncube, the editor of the Star newspaper, also a Zimbabwean, now joins me on the line from Harare. Japhet, what is the feeling like in the capital, and what is it like for you to be there reporting on this momentous occasion?
Karima, the situation here is unbelievable. I'm sure you can hear from outside my hotel window, the people have been hooting since the announcement was made. Harare has gone crazy, absolutely crazy.
I can imagine. We've been watching scenes here on the television. We've, of course, also been watching Zimbabweans in pockets of South Africa, in places like Berea, Yeovil, Sunnyside, all over Gauteng, Japhet, wherever Zimbabweans are, of course, also just taking to the streets spontaneously, that almost like a pressure valve has been released and people just kind of expressing emotion. The obviously, we're going to come to the serious issues, to the dangers of the moment, because there are many, but the jubilation, Japhet, obviously also tied with that sense of hope for the first time in a long, long time.
Yes, Karima. You know, when the announcement was made, I was actually on my way from the ICC to come to the hotel to file for the Star. And everything just went berserk. I went to Africa Unit Square, which is just opposite Parliament. And there's a guy there who said, Christmas has come to Zimbabwe. Today is Christmas. I'm going to sleep very peacefully. peacefully tonight.
Crystal, let
me... Those words, I think, just capture the mood in the city.
Absolutely. Crystal, let me bring you in here. Crystal Audison, our Africa specialist. You have covered this country for a very long time. You intimately knowledgeable about the dynamics. You mix in this community in the diaspora. Your sense of today, Crystal, I was very struck by one comment, and it was a young person who said, for those of us who come after liberation, today is in fact our independence. Is that an accurate summation for young people today?
Absolutely, Karima. In fact, a colleague, a friend in Kenya and another one in Zimbabwe called me at the same time, and they were much younger, in their 30s, and they said they were defined as the born frees, but never could they have imagined that in their lifetime they will see this happening and that they will be able to tell their children that change was possible. So an absolute euphoric day. I mean, Karima, this afternoon I was at the library and I was with a group of Zimbabwean nannies, because as you know, they are millions of Zimbabweans working all over South Africa simply here to feed their families. And I was asking them, you know, what are your thoughts? What do you think? And they were saying, we're simply praying for a miracle. And I was simply listening to them and not knowing that a few hours later, Robert Gabriel Mugabe had in fact announced that he has resigned. Because after Sunday evening, people were simply left very disappointed and felt that he's holding on to power and something has to give. And now, of course, today, scenes of jubilation, which is, I think, certainly an overwhelming feeling.
Absolutely. Professor Raftopoulos, you know, I, in my own life in South Africa, I was an activist. And one of the things that, you know, got my generation involved was not just the belief that we should fight, but it was the belief that we could fight and win against the Boers, against apartheid. And I suppose for those of you who were part of the liberation struggle and part of nationalist politics during the time of the anti-colonial struggle, that was equally important. But to be oppressed by a liberator, to be oppressed by someone whom you were in the trenches with, and then to witness your freedom from that must be like a second blessing, if you like.
It is. It's a different structural feeling.
Yes.
It's a sense that you first have to overcome a certain kind of hurdle.
Yes.
Of understanding that this party, this leader that you supported and gave so much, put so much hope in, has actually turned his back on you and others. And that's a big hurdle to overcome. And then once that's done, you have to, along with others, work with others to create a new sense of possibility.
Mm-hmm.
And that only comes through certain kinds of praxis, certain kinds of political mobilization, and through a lot of suffering, which people have been through, people like Tendai and others in the MDC.
Mm.
But I think that despite all this, what has struck me is how people never lost hope in terms of the political possibilities. That
Absolutely.
Even in the darkest moments, they thought something will happen.
Absolutely. And of course, we know that nothing is won and gained only in boardrooms and in argument. You actually have to be involved, as you say, in a different kind of praxis, in a different kind of organization, a different theory of revolution in many ways. And of course, this moment, poignant as it is, jubilant as it is pregnant with possibilities and with very real dangers. We saw in Egypt, not so long ago, when Mubarak, stepped down and was forced out of office, the army coming in, the people embracing the army. And we saw, of course, how that went horribly wrong. What are the immediate dangers, according to you, Brian, that needs to be squarely faced in this moment and perhaps beyond this moment to ensure that the breakthrough that we have in the last 48 hours is actually the building blocks for genuine change, for long-lasting change, and for a change that will be, sustainable going forward?
I think the first danger is to... people need to problematize this current romance that they're having with the military.
Yes.
Because it's the same military now who have made themselves the arbiters of political rule.
Mm-hmm.
And they've set a definite precedent. They've done it in the past. They've decided that Tsvangirai couldn't win in 2002 and 2008. They decided that Mugabe must go now. And there's a sense in which people's desperation is so high that they accept this really problematic transition because they so want to move beyond the deadlock that they are. That's the first thing. The second thing is that what we're likely to see is some kind of manner in which this rejuvenating ZANU-PF might draw in leaders from the opposition in some kind of GNU, which will only further weaken them because they'll be very weak within that coalition. They'll have very little traction. The third is the role of the international community. My real sense is that there's many now in the international community, provided there's a certain constitutional veneer to this, who would move towards a re-engagement and overlook many of the possible dangers that are there. And I think we need a much more careful response to this new engagement.
Absolutely. Japhet, I mean, you are intimately familiar with the developments in Zimbabwe, some of the issues between the political parties. We saw as the preparations got underway for that impeachment process, there was an indication and a commitment from the MDC to join hands with ZANU to manage that process and to get the president out. Do you think, as Professor Aftopoulos says, that sections of the opposition is now going to be amenable to almost be absorbed and almost, you know, taken in by ZANU-PF? Is that a very real possibility?
Yeah, I think that's what we're going to see. I spoke to some of the MDC MPs who are staying in the same hotel here, and they were saying that for the first time, I think since the formation of the MDC, they have a common purpose with ZANU-PF. I think that we're going to see a lot of them being absorbed into the new era, either as cabinet ministers or as members of parliament. I think there's going to be a lot of realignment of Zimbabwean politics henceforth.
Now, excuse me, the other big factor, of course, is the war veterans. You know, they have come out, for better or worse, these in the last, let's say, 72 hours for a situation where they want to see cooperation. They don't mouth the kind of rhetoric that says that they are merely going to be a pawn of ZANU-PF. Is there a new sense of urgency and perhaps a mature political posture on the side of the war veterans, Japhet? And could they potentially be that bridge that you need in Zimbabwean politics where the divide between those who participated in the War of Liberation and those who come after, that one can actually make that less of a factor for who is fit and able to rule a Zimbabwe going into the future?
Yeah, we understand that in the last couple of days, the war veterans have been talking to a lot of people in the MDC, trying to explain to them that this is not a time for us to work differently as political parties. We have one common goal, and that one common goal is to get rid of Robert Mugabe, which is why even when Mugabe couldn't resign on Sunday, when everybody expected him to resign, the war veterans were quick to call another press conference to announce that they still want him to resign and they're not backing off. And the MDC at the same time were saying to us that they were going to be moving this motion to impeach Mugabe in parliament. And today when we got to parliament, we actually saw that all the political parties were working together. It was clear to me from this afternoon that Mugabe had no way out of this.
Crystal, I want to ask you before we take a short commercial break, which we will have to, but I want you to think about it during the break. This you know, friction within ZANU-PF brought about, of course, and precipitated by Mugabe's axing of his deputy and the return of Emmerson Mnangagwa. What is it going to mean for ZANU-PF? I mean, surely no political party can pretend that what's happened in the last couple of days, you know, can be put aside. Can ZANU-PF go back to business as usual? Can Emmerson basically pick up and implement implement and continue with what Mugabe has been doing? Or is there going to be a different timetable and a different set of priorities that he will have to advance to be able to recalibrate ZANU-PF and to get it fighting fit for an election? We're going to take a short break. When we come back, I want Crystal to give us an answer to those questions. We are, of course, in conversation with a series of people, including academics, journalists, discussing the momentous developments in Zimbabwe following the resignation of Robert Mugabe, the world's longest serving head of state. Crystal, the issue around whether ZANU can kind of just pick up where they've left off, is that now something of the past? Will they have to recalibrate? Will they have to put forward a new program going forward?
I think they will have to, Karima. I think firstly, 2 weeks ago, Robert Mugabe at a rally said that he's thinking of firing the VP. Within 48 hours, we were told that 10 regions, including the Women's League and the Youth League, had agreed that Emmerson Mnangagwa should be fired. And that happened. We suddenly saw, on Sunday, the opposite. So I think that's firstly that, you suddenly had a shift within voices within ZANU-PF within a space of 2 weeks. Of course, the question also, what happens to the G40 group?
Yes.
They were a number of different players, including, obviously Professor Moyo was the big voice because he was the spin doctor. He was also always on social media. But we're looking at the finance minister and a whole host of ministers that were brought in when Robert Mugabe made that cabinet reshuffle a few weeks ago. So I don't think they simply disappear because they were seen as the younger generation. They were seen as Grace's loyalists, but active within the party. I don't think they will simply disappear. And on Sunday evening, with Robert Mugabe's speech that he gave, he alluded to the different groupings and that it was time to rebuild the party. So even he was fully aware. So I think Emmerson Mnangagwa, as he returns to the country, or perhaps he's already in Zimbabwe, this is the reality that he has to face, that he has a party that is divided and that he will have to rebuild. But I think the fact is that ZANU-PF really comes out the winner in all of this. They were the ones who brought about change in 1980, and now with the help of the military 37 years later, that's what is in the minds of people, of course. So I do think that the party firstly will have to pick up the pieces, so to say, but on the other hand, they are also seen as the ones that brought about change, and that could mean that the party can increase their support. And who knows, we might see former party veterans that were kicked out, like the former VP Joyce Majuro. Who knows, she might be making a comeback back into the party as well.
Absolutely. We'll, of course, watch the machinations in the governing party, ZANU-PF.
To choose the leader of their choice. The elections are not rigged. There's no intimidation. There's no violence. Because, ZANU-PF ran his political machinery on the basis of ruthless, intimidation, violence.
Absolutely.
Pushing people into submission, making sure, especially in the rural areas.
Yeah. But Brian, let me bring you in here. In terms of what the MDC is saying, one can't argue with the need to build strong institutions. But a lot of these institutions are, of course, top-heavy with functionaries of ZANU-PF. It's extraordinary how the change in the political setup within ZANU is already affecting very important things, like just the Herald, which was a mouthpiece of the government, has already turned on Grace Mugabe, for example. Less than a week ago, they were singing her praises. What kind of institutional clean out will one require to ensure that institutions such as the media, such as your judiciary and other important critical instruments that will create this environment in which free political activity can happen? What kind of cleanup will have to happen? And do you think ZANU is just going to give up on those institutions that they've controlled for so long?
Certainly not. I certainly don't think a so-called reforms faction of ZANU-PF can have that kind of cleanup, which would require a great deal of professionalism, idea that people get in there on their merit. And we already saw in the statement which removed Mugabe, making it clear that the war veterans will be given certain key, strategic positions. So what I think you're likely to see is a different kind of discourse coming out of this this ZANU-PF formation. It could be a combination of the legacy of the liberation struggle, the veneer of constitutionalism, and a neoliberal economic opening up. And I think what Mnangagwa will do is try to move the debate very quickly away from this transition with all its problems towards its discussion around the economy,
yes,
and engagement with the international community to try and shift the grounds of the debate.
Jafet, we're going to take a short break, but I want you to think about the possibility of the axed VP emerging as a crusader to get that economy going. Last night, veteran Zimbabwean journalist Peter Thornycroft said that the business community trusts him despite his checkered political history. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to be looking at whether Emmerson Mnangagwa is the man to lead ZANU-PF and, in fact, this transition forward. I'm in conversation with the editor of the Star newspaper, Jafet Ncube, who's in Harare. He is, of course, also Zimbabwean, as well as a veteran political analyst, Professor Brian Raftopoulos, another Zimbabwean, and my colleague here on 702, Crystal Audison, who's the Africa Report specialist. And she's, of course, covered many countries and developments on the continent, Zimbabwe, included among the countries which she has intimate knowledge of. Jafet, is Emmerson Mnangagwa the man who can recalibrate ZANU-PF, and is he going to focus on the economy in that plan?
Yes, Karima. I think that he has an opportunity now to emerge out of the shadows of Robert Mugabe, because even from the time when they were in the liberation struggle in Mozambique, he always lived in the shadow of Mugabe.
Mm.
Now he has an opportunity to show that he's his own man. I think he knows that he needs to succeed and that he has no option but to succeed. I think he's going to surprise a lot of people. I think he's going to come in and fix a lot of the problems that ZANU-PF are currently facing. Mugabe had centralized power to himself and his wife and his family and a few of his friends
and relatives. I think what we are going to see in the next couple of months is that Mnangagwa is going to change the culture that we had begun to see in ZANU-PF, where people did not have a voice, where people could not stand up to Mugabe. I think with the fear now gone in the party, and also Mnangagwa knowing that the army and the people of this country are watching him, is not going to follow in the footsteps of Robert Mugabe.
Brian, let me bring you in here. Peter said last night, and I found it really interesting, she said he, unlike Robert Mugabe, is actually a successful farmer. His farm is doing well. He is said to have paid the for the farm. He didn't just take it. And that there is a sense that the business community trusts him, that he enjoys their ear and he enjoys their confidence. One, is this accurate? And two, he is also 75 years old. Zimbabwe is a country where there's a massive generation of young people who have been locked out of the economy. Is a 75-year-old leader the man to take Zimbabwe into the future?
Well, that is the challenge. I mean, I think that this is going to be one of his biggest challenges. He's ignited all this, and this whole movement has ignited all these passions of these young people, which are not going to be so easily put down again. And he's going to have to deliver something very substantive to keep this hope going. I think certainly I agree with Peter. There is has been a long view that the business community trusts him, and in also sections of the international business community as well. So there is that possibility. As I said, you could get some economic reforms, but I still think there's going to be very slow development on the side of political reform.
Now, of course, I mean, the Zimbabwean economy has had almost as a tumultuous, experience as its political landscape. What are the first practical things that he would have to do, or anyone who takes Robert Mugabe's place, to begin to signal that Zimbabwe's economy can make some sort of recovery?
I think the first thing is to get a consensus amongst the major players in the economy on what they want to do, to have a plan that's inclusive, that has a buy-in from the key players in the economy, and then to begin a constructive engagement with investors, with people who can help to bring about changes in the economy and put in place transparent structures and predictable structures that people are able to work with, rather than structures that are dependent on the whims of the kind of patronage systems that have been in place all along.
Now, the one thing that I also want to understand, Jafet, before I go to Crystal, because I want to ask Crystal specifically about young people, but where is Grace Mugabe, Jafet? And do we have any idea of what her next moves are going to be? The reason I'm asking is, again, when I spoke with Petra last night, she gave a fantastic breakdown of the kind of financial investments that Grace has been making in various businesses that she sees. She was referring to one of the most profitable dairies, apparently, on the African continent that Grace has taken over. And, of course, there's visible assets of the Mugabes across the country. Where is she? What do we know has been negotiated in terms of guarantees? Last night when the army took to the airwaves, it said that it had discussed with President Mugabe, or former President Mugabe, a series of guarantees. What is the word on Grace Mugabe?
Well, Karima, that's one of the mysteries of
this whole issue, is that nobody really knows where Mugabe is. Yesterday, I heard some journalists here telling me that for the first time since the army took over, she was allowed to leave and go to her farm, the same farm that you've just spoken about. We don't have any confirmation of that. Earlier, I think last week, people were saying she's in Namibia, but we understand that she's in fact in the country. What has happened is that the army has managed to negotiate with President Mugabe to say that if he leaves office, they won't prosecute him and his family. So he would be able to stay with his wife and they can continue to do their farming and nobody's going to bother them. I think she is in the country, but I think the new Zimbabwe does not have a space or a place for Grace Mugabe because of the problems that she has caused the people of this country. I expect that she's going to live outside this country. She can't come to South Africa for obvious reasons. Herinel is looking for her there. She will probably go and live in Dubai. She will probably go and live in Singapore. I don't think she will be able to live in Zimbabwe and feel very safe.
To come to Crystal, the young people, of course, despite the kind of G40 around in ZANU-PF, I mean, she is despised among ordinary Zimbabweans. It is young people that have felt the brunt of the meltdown of that economy. How are they going to respond, Crystal? And more importantly, those Zimbabweans who find themselves in the diaspora, something close to, I think, 3 million of them. Is there a sense from just the discussions, obviously we're talking about purely anecdotal stuff, but is there a sense among people that they're first going to wait and see before they make any moves to go back home?
Karima, I think this has been the saddest story of the lost generation over the past years. I mean, we know in the 80s, Robert Mugabe defied, the World Bank and the IMF, defied structural adjustment programs and ensured that Zimbabweans were educated. And over the past 10 years or so, or even longer, we saw the complete reversal. We know of young people here in South Africa that have studied with degrees, that are either waiters, that are nannies, etc. And so, of course, there are high hopes that there will firstly be a reversal in terms of the economy. And people simply want to go back, Karima. They don't want to be in South Africa or all over the diaspora. They want to go back. They want to contribute to their country. But I do think it's going to take some time. I don't think it's going to happen overnight. But I do think that has been the sad story of Zimbabwe, is that lost generation that have been completely annihilated, that have had to leave their country, that have had to do meager jobs in order to support their families.
That, of course, Crystal Audison there, our Africa specialist. Thank you so very much also to the editor of the Star newspaper, Jafet Ncube, speaking to us from Harare, and veteran political analyst and the director of Research Solidarity Peace Trust, Professor Brian Raftopoulos.